Hi, everybody, and you're very welcome to the special 500th edition episode of my podcast channel. So what a journey it's been, and we are we're only just starting. We're just getting warmed up, so we got so much to cover tonight, and I've got various people joining me in the studio. Most particularly, I've got my colleague from Alt News Media, Ed, who's going to join us. We have our producer, Jed, who's going to join us. And hopefully everything will run smoothly. As you know, much like the course of true love, it doesn't always, but we shall see how we get on. Anyway, thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining in. If you want to contribute, by the way, you can. Very simply, let me know, and you can join the conversation directly. Speak to me. Okay, let me just bring in a couple of our guests. First of all, I'm going to see if I can get the first guest in, if we can. How do we do this? Let's see. How we do all this one, folks. So, right. Okay, folks, we are checking out the technical abilities of yours truly as we bring people into the studio. First
good evening,
of all,
David.
Oh, hi, Jed. You're there. Hi, good evening.
I'm here, David. Yeah, I was just waiting for you, and I can see Ed in the background. So,
can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Ed.
Yeah, yeah, we have. Hey, everyone, we have liftoff. Who said this would be difficult? So, Ed, first of all, very warm welcome to you on the podcast live stream.
Thank you, David. Glad to be here, as always.
Yeah, can I just say, Ed, your sound is spectacular. It sounds like you're coming from next door rather than a distance away. So that's working really well. That's good.
The Apple AirPods are working then. I was a bit worried about them, but it works. That's good.
Yeah, I think the one thing about Podbean, I'm sure you'd agree, Jed, is that the audio on it is kind of spectacular.
Oh, yeah. It gives that deep, rich sound as well, particularly for yourself, David.
Yeah, I've got to say, I do find it's incredible. And of course, you know, I just wanted to say, by the way, that there will be people who listen to this live, and then there's the people who will listen to this on replay. So whether you're a live listener, whether you're a replay listener, doesn't matter. We're happy to have you. And by the way, if you like it, if you're listening to this and you like it, hit the heart button. I think on your phone there's a heart button. Hit that, and that sends us some love, lets us know that you enjoy the conversation, if you can do that. And the final thing before we kick off onto the topics, just to say, of course, if you enjoy the podcast, you want to support the channel, you can do that in several different ways, but the best way is to become a patron of the channel. All you have to do is hit the click, and it takes you into the wonderful world of being an active supporter of my podcast channel. So without further ado, Ed, it's been a while since we've talked about some of these issues, but in case, I don't suppose anyone's missed it because the media haven't half droned on about it. The Labour Party conference, Labour have been holding their annual conference down in Brighton, I think it was, Ed. I wondered your overall impressions of that wonderful event.
Well, talking about droning on, has Keir Starmer finished his speech yet? it was everything you'd expect. There were scuffles, fights, people thrown out, people not there because they're up in court, like Claudia Webb. It was the kind of farcical show that we've come to expect, really. Kind of ended with Keir Starmer just an hour and a half of just talking platitudes and absolutely no substance. You know, we are for law and order. And then in North Korea style, you had the whole audience applauding. Then another sentence, everybody applauding. It was quite a bizarre spectacle, and there were hecklers and all the rest of it. So I don't think we've learnt anything. I see they've dropped a point in the polls, which is quite spectacular after a conference to actually go down. I just thought it was, the whole thing was a real chance. He's had a year and a half to prepare for this. It's his first address of its type. And it was so underwhelming and boring. It was incredible. So,
do you think he was channeling his inner Tony Blair?
I think his overarching aim for the whole thing was to put clear distance between himself and the Corbyn era, and you know that rabble, and I suppose he did that, looking at the angry reaction of sort of Momentum and the sort of hard left of the party. So I think that was his aim, and probably he's achieved that, I would say, with that. So, yeah, because he knows the only way he could ever have a hope of challenging is to move to that centre ground, away from the left and to the centre. It's an interesting dynamic we've got at the moment, because we've got the Tories probably left of where Tony Blair was. And I think I've been thinking about this in terms of why the Tories so left on green and immigration and everything else. And I think it's actually strategic. I was talking to Nick Buckley. I don't know, you might have seen him on TV News, the guy from Manchester. And I thought, actually, you've got this spot on. His theory was that to retain power, the Tories just need to stay one step to the right of the Labour Party. So if Labour are far left, which they have been, as long as the Tories are just one step to the right of that, which can be centre-left, they will sweep all the votes on the right down to centre-left, because nobody to the right of Labour is going to vote for Labour. So it's a, you know, it's almost like a deliberate strategy, I guess, for the Tories to retain power. So by Labour moving more to the centre, it will be interesting to see how the Tories react, because I think they will have to now move more to the right as a party as well.
That's an interesting theory, that one, because obviously during the Corbyn era, they were clearly, you know, extreme left, and their policies were fantasy. But I mean, there were policies coming out of this conference, Ed, which, I mean, like, for example, let's double the minimum wage, basically. I mean, that's certainly from the Corbynista playbook, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But of course, it comes out that Momentum and Labour and everybody else doesn't pay that themselves. So, you know, a lot of hypocrisy is, you know, we've kind of come to expect. I mean, I guess what he's trying to do is move to the centre, but not lose all of the party on that journey, I suppose. You know, he's got the unions and everybody else to keep on board. So he's trying to just tread that ground somewhat carefully, and I mean, he's got an impossible job, and I suspect he'll end up being a fall guy. He will reform Labour to some extent, then have to go for somebody else to come in at some point.
Well, could that person be Angela Rayner, or could it be Andy Burnham, all the way from Manchester?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Angela Rayner would be an absolute disaster for them and completely unelectable. She's just no one can relate to her. She's just not. I mean, let's be honest. People gravitate to people. That's just human nature and in life. And for all the politics and everything, if you don't like somebody, you're not going to vote for them. It's the same with anything in life. And I just think she is a very unlikable person. So I think politically, she would be a disaster for them. And I don't think there's any chance that the sensible people at Labour would allow her anywhere near the leadership. So Burnham, I think, would be the biggest threat to the Tories, because he's just quite normal, isn't he? And that's what Labour need, somebody normal. So I think Burnham would be their best hope to recover some ground.
Yeah, well, actually, I kind of agree with you, Ed. I think that Starmer is going to be the fall guy, as you rightly point out, because he won't be able to turn Labour Party fortunes around quick enough. He can't do that, I don't believe. But he could make a degree of progress, and then someone like Burnham could come along and be the kind of reasonable working class Manchester guy, although, mind you, although you're saying that Angela Rayner couldn't ever be leader, but she's deputy leader, isn't she? I mean, so she does have some, there's obviously a coterie of that Corbynista ilk, which are still in you know, they're still there in Labour, and they have, you know, their significant numbers when it comes to voting as well. So, and of course, Ed, the other thing about Labour is there is the thing that we're not allowed to talk about on fascist channels like YouTube, but which we can talk about here. There's the Islamic issue when it comes to, you know, the Labour Party voting base. So it is tricky for, I suppose, anybody leading Labour.
Yes, I agree with you. I think that my kind of observations of it is, you know, Starmer's like a plank of wood, isn't he? He has no personality or charisma, and he's just not inspiring at all. He might be competent, he might be clever and all the rest of it, but he doesn't come across as a leader, and he's been so on the fence for the last 18 months on everything. He's neither here nor there. And the other challenge he's got, I mean, it was laughable talking about his father on the factory floor. What he didn't mention was his father owned the factory. You know, he's Sir Keir, just like we have Sir Ed Davey. So, yeah. You know, touting themselves as the working class with Starmer as the Sir Keir as the leader and all the rest of it, I don't think will wash particularly. Whereas I think maybe Andy Burnham, you know, he was relatively popular when he was in Liverpool. He was in Liverpool prior to the mayor of Manchester, wasn't he? And he, you know, he did a good job with the whole Hillsborough thing. And, you know, he's relatively, you know, as Labour go, I think he's relatively untarnished as an individual, and people can kind of relate to him, and he seems normal. And the problem Starmer's got is there's not many in that party, or Labour have got, that you would say are normal people. And I think the one thing Starmer has to do, if he's really serious about this rebranding of the party, he's got to get shut of, you know, we all know them. They're like the English equivalent of the Squad, aren't they? Those, you know, the Lammies of this world, and you know, Claudia Webb and Zara Sultan, all these people who are just identity politics, race-baiting, divisive, angry individuals. You know, Rainer, calling people scum. You know, all that stuff's got to go if he wants to get to the Blair type position, in my view.
Yeah, and I'd agree. Can I just bring Jed in? Jed, I mean, you're listening to what we're talking about. And I mean, what was your summary view of Labour, the Labour conference, and Sir Keir in particular?
It was one of two things. First of all, yawn, yawn, yawn. And then actually, all we needed was clown music. Because it was just like a clown conference, wasn't it? You know, we had, you know, speakers going on that yeah, you know, all I can see is white men, and we need diversity. And yet the four speakers before the white man saying, oh, it's only white men that seems to be asking questions, were all people of colour. You know, yeah. So we had four people of colour, which I think three of them were women. Then this one guy that spent 10 minutes telling everybody that they were too white, too male, too old, and then they expect people to vote for them. What planet are they on?
Well, yeah. Well, yeah, right. I mean, actually, one of my favorite bits was Sir Keir telling us that. I mean, first of all, two things I would say. Did I want to know? Did anybody anywhere read his 15,000-word essay? Ed, did you read it?
I tell you, no. The only person that read it was Starmer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
because everybody else used it to start the fire.
Yeah, and then as Ed pointed out rightly, he spoke for an hour and a half. I mean, that's the same length of time as a football match, isn't it? imagine talking for an hour and a half. I mean, for the equivalent of a football match. No, I mean, yeah, Ed, I agree with so much of your analysis, but I also kind of agree with Jed saying it's also clown world, because I don't see how that connects to. And for the ordinary people of Britain, and in particular, we're going to come on to this in a second. We're going to talk about the stuff that's been happening around the southern, you know, the tsunami coming across the channel and Labour's response to that. But ultimately, if you can't connect into the fundamental needs of the British nation, and I suppose particularly the English people, to be honest, I don't see how you can ever expect to hold power. So it's a monumental task, Jed. Jed, ask you a simple question. Do you think Labour can ever become electable again?
No, is the simple answer. But I found it quite amusing when Keir said in his speech that he wasn't a career politician. And I appreciate he was a lawyer before that, but I think the only reason he was a lawyer before that was to go into politics. And then to stand there and try and be the common man, you know, being Sir Keir, you know, I'd rather buy a Keir car, and they are crap, than vote for Keir Starmer.
Right. Okay. Stop sitting on the fence there, Jed. Say what you think. But Ed, I mean, as I say, I just think that the like the point you made about David Lammy, you know, Claudia Webb, unbelievable, some of these individuals, that they do need to be swept away. But I just don't know how you sweep them away, because Lammy's got, I think, a huge majority in his constituency in London. So he's going to get elected and elected and elected again. And I don't know how you exile him from the position that he is in. How do you think that could be achieved?
To be honest with you, a good leader will find a way. So, you know, Claudia Webb at the moment is in court. I'm not sure how that's going at the moment on various charges. You know, he's kind of done it with Corbyn, hasn't he? He's removed the whip. And, you know, there's plenty of things, for example, that Lammy has said over the last couple of years he could say doesn't reflect party value. You know, you can do it. If you're a strong leader, you will find a way to sort of mould things to your will. And I just don't think he's prepared to do that. I know there's a lot of noise around the whole trans thing and all the rest of it. Now, I'm sorry, but the guy, you know, there's somebody storming the stage in a kind of overweight man in a dress, and there was somebody on stage, a man who was to the majority of the public, the optics, it looks ridiculous. You know, this is
Ed's point.
People won't vote for it. You might say, well, people should be more tolerant and whatever. Yeah, that's all fine. But the reality is, not everybody reads The Guardian and lives in Islington and thinks that way. And they will see all these characters and some of the ridiculous scenes that we've seen and think they do not relate me. And, you know, I use a friend of mine, Dave, who his father worked on the dock, voted Labour all his life and cannot vote for this Labour Party because it does not reflect him in any shape or form. They do not reflect the views of the working man who are typically patriotic, love the country, et cetera, and what the Labour spend all the time doing down this country. And so, yeah, I think they're stuffed, they're absolutely stuffed.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing, Jed, I mean, for following on from what Ed said there, I mean, you had Sir Keir tell us that he thinks it's wrong to suggest that, what was it, so women, people have a cervix?
It shouldn't be said that only women have a cervix. It shouldn't be said.
That is the fundamental issue. You cannot turn round to 67 million people in this country and let's say only 50% of them can vote. You can't turn round and say that a woman does not have a cervix, or to be a woman, you do not need a cervix.
You don't need, well, I think, yeah, that's what
he was against the wall, David.
Yeah, you know, well, He also went on to tell us that he thinks the next James Bond should be a woman. So to my mind, this is a manipulative, like Ed says, this is a guy who is basically, he's living in that Islington bubble world, isn't he? He's that metropolitan elitist world.
I think David. I think they're trapped. And I'm going to go back to what Ed said about the English version of the squad. I think there is a squad within the Labour Party, and the rest of the Labour Party are terrified of speaking out against them. So what do? They go along with it. Now, you know and I know that there are some Labour members, Labour politicians who've been Labour to the core since the day they were born. And you know they don't believe that, you know, it's transphobic to say, woman, adult, female, whatever it is, the phrase is or definition is, but they say it anyway because they're terrified of that element of the Labour Party going after them, because the left, for all the times they say we are diverse and we welcome everybody, no, they don't. They only welcome those that agree with them.
Yeah, and that's definitely the issue. But you know, we could talk about the inadequacies of Labour all night long, and there wouldn't be enough time left. But I think we also need to talk about the Conservative Party. Now they're having their conference. I think it's this weekend coming. I think it's imminent, and that will be a cause for much amusement for me as well, because I find them as despicable as the Labour Party. And one of the issues, Ed, where Conservatives have proven catastrophic, just one area, mind you, it's hard to isolate one. They're so bad on just about every front. But they came to, we voted for Brexit to take control of our borders again, to stop the illegal migration coming into the UK. And I'm sure we just saw that, you may have seen the figures, Ed, that year to date, I think illegal migration landing on the southern shores is double what it was in 2020. So much for Priti Patel and Boris getting tough on illegal migration. What's your thoughts on that, Ed?
Yeah, well, I was actually looking, I looked at an old article on Alt News Media, and it was a year or so ago. And it was uproar about, I think it was 200 and something illegal immigrants had landed that day. And of course, we've hit 1,000, haven't we? And we're regularly at 600-700 a day and everything. So I think it comes back to this. Is this a deliberate positioning of the Tories just slightly to the right of the Labour Party? Because I think if they come down hard on immigration, they fear potential backlash, which, trust me, they wouldn't get. You know, there's every poll that's ever conducted shows the vast majority of the public want immigration controlled.
Now I
don't know, is this deliberate? Are they being hamstrung by the public sector and the civil service? I don't know, but it's just beyond belief to me that this has gone on so long. But pretty, for me, what really jumped out at me that made alarm bells ring was Priti Patel endorsed Cressida Dick for another 2 years.
Yeah.
And I thought that was an opportunity to make a statement about value, law and order, which is the next thing that we expect of a Conservative, is strength on law and order. Now, Cressida Dick has been an unmitigated disaster for her tenure on every front. It's just problem after problem after problem. And Sadiq Khan obviously rubber stamped her, and Priti Patel did. And you know, you scratch your head and think, why not take the opportunity to make a statement? She came out, sorry to digress slightly, but she came out today and made a statement around, obviously, this horrendous crime with Sarah Everard and what's happened. Now, the policies for reform for the Met Police were proposed in a paper produced in 2011 after another police constable was convicted of sex crimes and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
None of them have been implemented. The vetting, everything that's in there 10 years later hasn't been implemented. So over half of police that are found guilty of committing these, not as bad as that, but, you know, sexual assaults and things and abusing the position, over half keep their job. So not acceptable. Absolutely, 100% not acceptable. She should go. She's overseen a disastrous period of time for the Met Police and should go. And yet Priti Patel has kept her in the job for 2 years. So what is going on?
Well, Jed, what's your view on the fact that we see, you know, the number of, I mean, I believe the English Channel has been pretty rough in the past day or so. So there's not been any landings just because the weather's so bad. But for month after month after month, I mean, it looked like the Normandy landings in reverse. And how, in your view, can a so-called Conservative government preside over this? And what, more to the point, why? Why do they preside over this?
Because they don't care. It's the bottom line. They really, because mass immigration does not affect them in the slightest. In fact, for the vast majority of them, it earns them more profit, because they can pay for the companies that they're you know, sat on the board with, et cetera, or taking backhanders from, you know, Cash for questions. Because if you think that has gone away, then think again. But they're not affected by it at all. So why bother? You know, until, you know, Mr. Afghan and his 16 million kids are moved in to number 11, and the neighborhood goes downhill and cars are vandalized and robbed and houses are robbed and people are beaten up, and then they will not take any notice whatsoever, because us plebs don't matter. As long as we keep going to work and paying our taxes, they do not care.
But I mean, I think that one of the difficulties is that the Conservatives got the Conservative Party did make a song and dance about the fact that they would get tough on illegal migration. And I think most people have been able to see, Ed, that that's patently not been the case. In fact, I saw today, jumping back onto Twitter for a second, that particular hellish bastion, that what's the guy in this guy? Is it Stevie Laws, the guy who has been sort of, you know, photographing
and reporting?
Reporting. I see his account was suspended from Twitter today. So it's like people know that the Tories have fallen down in this, and I wonder, will that carry any electoral consequence, or do ultimately people are people so sheep-like that they'll just say, yeah, well, they're not very good, but Labour will be a bit worse, so we'll just stick with Priddy and Boris and the gang. What do you think?
Well, the problem is, or the absolute, you know, boost and boon for the Tories is what's the alternative, and that's the problem. There's nobody keeping their feet to the fire on this stuff. So they know that however bad they are, people aren't going to say, well, we'll give a chance to Labour, because they know Labour will be even worse. But what I would say is illegal immigration is the highest now it's ever been in our history. So, and that's after, you know, 9 years or whatever it is, 10 years of a Conservative government, and it's the highest it's ever been. I've no doubt it would be worse under Labour, but last time I looked, we hadn't deported a single person this year that had come in. And you just think, what? I keep saying it, but what is the reason for this? It can't be a lack of ability to do it, because they're the government. They can do it. You know, they can turn the boats. You know, whatever they want to do, they can do it. They're the government. They can pass the law. They've got an 80-seat majority. So you have to say they don't want to do it.
Yeah.
And the question is, why don't they want to do it? I just don't get it. And what Jed said is spot on, because these people are dropped in typically northern towns, and they kind of – I know that – Sadiq Khan was virtue signalling with a big, oh, thanks to a council in London that was taking them on, that found all this housing and all the rest of it, which this housing appears, doesn't it, for Afghans? But it never appears for veterans or homeless people, which is, again, the normal Joe public just scratches the head about this stuff and thinks, how is this happening? But, you know, if he saw it, not a million miles from me in Wigan, you know, a 12-year-old girl was harassed by a group of these Afghans who'd been dropped in a hotel a few weeks ago. So the consequences aren't on their doorstep. They're kind of, oh, somewhere up north, and we don't worry about that. And but they need, you know, that red wall, as it was, which isn't a red wall now. They've got to keep them on side. But the problem the Labour have got is they're not a viable option. So, you know, we need a UKIP type party, I think, to keep the feet to the fire for the Tories on all this stuff.
Well, actually, just on that, Ed, just to follow on, you know, as we know, I mean, there are lots of small parties that have been going for a few years, not least for Britain, with Anne-Marie. And I think the message from a party such as For Britain is it's pretty strong on the issue of, you know, maintaining our national sovereignty, making sure that our borders are secure. So, to what do you attribute the fact that that message doesn't seem to cut through to the general electorate, insofar as, you know, when they've been presented with the choice of For Britain or for UKIP, or, well, you know, it doesn't seem to cut through. Why is that?
Well, there's a number of reasons for that, I think. I think people trusted the Tories under Boris would get a grip of this and feel horribly let down. I think that's part of it. You know, there's no doubt that there is an absolute suppression of a narrative that the media know would be positive. So, you know, if Anne-Marie or these people were given anything like the platform that the Labour Party's given in terms of news coverage, interviews and the rest of it, I mean, they would overnight become stratospheric in terms of popularity. So, of course, they're suppressed and they're given absolutely no coverage, absolutely no time. And as such, you know, most people were relatively politicised, were interested in it. Most people aren't. And that apathy is the biggest friend of the big two of Labour and the Tories. You know, apathy is their friend. You know, I saw in Hartlepool, I think it was, or somewhere, they were interviewing the public. Half of them hadn't even heard. They didn't know who the Labour leader was. They didn't know who Keir Starmer was. So that's the problem right there, you know. I think there's an apathy that it doesn't matter who's in government, we'll have to pay loads of tax and it will, you know, and that.
That's true. Yeah. Jed, would you agree with that? Because that sounds right to me.
I would actually, yeah. Because your average Joe Saw, you know, what do? They work Monday to Friday, go out, you know, there's still places in this country where Friday night is ladies' night, Saturday night is guys' night, if you see what I mean. And then Sunday, before Sunday tea, the guys go down to the pub for a couple, you know, and there's still places where that is still the norm.
Yeah.
So all your working man, and we say working man, we do mean working woman as well, but, you know, the working class just want to go to work, earn what they can earn, you know, buy the food, put a roof over their head, keep warm, keep dry, you know, and buy something nice at Christmas and maybe go away for a week in the summer. That's all they're bothered generally about, you know. So all this infighting with Labour I agree with what Ed's just said. Yeah. They just feel it's pointless who they vote for because nothing will change.
You see, I think that's true, but and I also think the way that's a great point you made about the media. And I mean, we could talk so much about the media, but I think the media, when you and I, Ed, started Alt News Media, you know, those years ago, we back then we were arch critics of the media. Since then, what I now realise is that we were never, ever critical enough about the media. The media in the UK is pure toxic. It's pure cancer. Let's just call it out for what it is. And it magnifies those things that it's interested in, and it diminishes those things and those people and those parties and those points of view that it isn't interested in. And inevitably, if you follow the money, you soon find out why that is. So the media has been crucial to keeping the Punch and Judy show going between Tories and Labour. And frankly, until that Punch and Judy show is broken up, things, in my view, will never improve. And I don't see how that can be broken up at this point in time. We did a podcast, Ed, last night with Alana Mercer, and we were talking about the stuff that's happening on the southern border, you know, in the US with all the people coming from Haiti and whatnot. And I mean, it's incredible what's happening there. But her view was that there's just not the will in the States to stop that surge of illegal migration coming through from both parties, Republican and Democrat. And I kind of think it's exactly the same in the UK. What do you think about that?
I think what's happened is the media, so since the rise of Trump, has bludgeoned the vast majority of people into submission. So if anybody broke ranks politically in the Tories or Labour and questioned the sort of things we talk about, it would be absolutely crucified overnight. And so I think the bullied silence and criticism and opposition. So the media is there's no accountability. The media are the root of a lot of our problems. So I saw when I saw that the petrol problem was easing today, Mm-hmm. And what do you see from the likes of The Independent? They find a story and then amplify it to keep the thing going. And it's all to get at the Tories, get at Boris. They don't care about the lives they ruin, the businesses they hurt. It's this petty, personal view of the world that they have. And it's like, I'll feel better for 10 minutes just by... And that's the media. They've become like the school union debating club and will create problems and as you say, not report on things. The Mirror, I mean, the poor lady, Sarah Everard, there was another lady killed, the school teacher, who I think she was a Muslim lady and was killed. And a week ago, the Daily Mirror said she should be talked about as much as Sarah Everard, say her name, why she's not getting the coverage, all this up in arms, the Mirror. As soon as it came out that an Afghan immigrant had killed her, the Mirror dropped the story completely. So, you know, if that doesn't tell you everything you need to know.
The media is the fourth estate. It's now its own political organisation, isn't it? It fights for its own cause, which is a left-wing cause, because the only people that populate the media nowadays are ex-uni people who've gone through the mill of being indoctrinated into Marxism, and far-left agenda. And they populate the media, so anything anybody does which goes against open borders, you can say whatever sex you are at the drop of a hat and you can change it 30 seconds later, and all that sort of gubbins and utter baloney, they're on board with all that. So again, the reason other parties don't get any say in this is because they'll be mashed by the media. And that's also, I think, why the Tories are actually a left-wing party now, because they're terrified of the media, because the media will slaughter them.
But, although, actually, can I just say a view I have is that if you look at in the past 18 months in particular, the amount of monies that have been transferred essentially from government to the media, and this is in respect of COVID-19, that essentially if you look at the P&Ls for many of the major newspaper organizations as well as organizations like ITV and whatnot, you will see that essentially the government has bought the media. So it's, I don't think it's just as cut and dried as the media, the government is scared of the media. They are they're certainly scared of the BBC. I get that. But also there's this really, things have changed so that the media, it's like the bit from George Orwell, you know, that from Animal Farm, where the pigs look to the humans and the humans look back to the pigs and they can no longer tell which is which. And that's how I feel about the media and the government. They are the same. But I want to move it on because we've got another 7 minutes I wanted to fill, and I wanted just to tackle with both of you another topic which kind of follows on, and that is, but we've seen these lunatics from Insulate Britain causing chaos, Ed, on the M25. I think they moved it on to another English motorway today. We have these injunctions being taken out about them, but against them, but they still do it. And, I mean, is there no rule of law anymore when it comes to these kind of activist scum?
Okay, where do I start with this one? So,
over to you.
yeah. I mean, when I change my Range Rover, it makes me want to get one with an even bigger engine, to be honest with you. I mean, the effect of what they're doing is negative. I mean, that goes without saying. But I think I really want to drive on a motorway and come up against these people, and I will go viral. Trust me, when that happens.
I know what you mean. What
I think people are furious about is, you know, Joe Public is trying to get to work or get to the hospital or whatever.
Yeah.
And the police manhandle Joe Public, whereas they're all nicey-nicey with these people who are criminals. Now, if they were a right-wing group or something like that, they would be steaming and dragging. So this, again, is Crusader Dick, isn't it? This is utterly two-tier policing, completely two-tier policing, and it's outrageous. And, you know, I mean, I heard, and so I'll caveat with, you know, this is what I've heard, that the lady that had the stroke who was held up has died. Now,
yep,
no, she, I heard that. I've heard today she's now, she's actually paralysed for life.
Ah, okay. So there was no pause out of respect for what they'd done, was there? There was no, do you know what, we're going to stop this because that is going too far, or no, you know, it's that communist left-wing thing of the individual doesn't matter. There'll be collateral damage along the way. It doesn't matter. It's the ideology that counts. But yeah, I mean, unfortunately, like Greta, who was always criticising the Tory, they're always left-wing agitators, and this is just the latest cause, unfortunately. And I think people can see through it because...
But you see, Ed, the police are on the same side because the police have...
Of course they are. They've all had the common purpose, purpose training.
No, absolutely, yeah. And they've all done that, and this is what I mean. So your average guy, you know, your bricklayer, your van driver, your plumber, they haven't been through that mill that converts you into a Marxist, you know, into a nut bar. All they've done is gone to school, left school, and grafted, and will graft until the day that they die.
Yeah.
You know, so they're the ones going, whoa, hang on, you're stopping me going to work. I'm trying to earn to put money in the gas meter.
Yeah.
And buy tea. But these loons who have spent their life at university, who more often than not are living off the bank of mum and dad, because mum and dad, you know, I've got a lovely house in the country, you know, where...
Retired teachers, a lot of them, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, and you think, but yeah, you're right, the police manhandled Joe Public, who has a legal right, if he sees a criminal offence happening, to arrest that individual.
Yeah.
And use acceptable force to detain them until the police get there. But when the police get there, they arrest the guy that's done the lawful thing.
Yeah. What I could say, this could be easily fixed. And again, it comes back. It's a three-pronged approach, actually. But it's the media, because the police could say no filming, no photographs, and give these people no coverage. And that would stop it overnight. But of course, no. What do all the media do? ITV, Good Morning Britain. Or they get the spokespeople on. They keep the thing going by interviewing them, giving them their time.
That's a very good point. It seems to me that the breakfast time TV programs have a kind of an endless amount of these spokespeople for these activist groups coming on. And in doing so, they give them the thing that Margaret Thatcher tried to deny to the IRA, namely what she called the oxygen of publicity.
Exactly.
But the media can't give them enough bloody oxygen. That's the problem.
LBC are there before the activists are. So they're obviously in on it. I mean, that would stop it. If the police said no filming, no photographs, and but they don't, you know, they stop the traffic for them, let them sit down, do all the filming, all the rest of it. And of course, they get the publicity they want. And yeah, as we've seen, they don't even have it. They haven't even insulated their own houses, you know, but it's not about that. It's nothing to do with the climate. It's not about that at all.
Yeah.
It's all about undermining the government. So, yeah.
Well. I think the thing is that I actually believe, I've come to believe that, and this applies to Extinction Rebellion as well, which I think is pretty much, they're all the same, really.
Yeah, same people.
Yeah, they're the same people. And I actually think that they operate with the tacit approval of the government, because I believe that all of the, okay, so it's a bit of a clown show, this thing about, you know, whether it's blocking a motorway or whether it's causing chaos in central London. But I believe that if you look at what this government is committed to, Ed, in terms of the environment and the net zero targeting and all of that, none of those things are possible without dramatic changes to our existing way of life. And therefore, when it comes to the lunacy from Insulate Britain, from Extinction Rebellion, it kind of suits the government. They can stand back and say, whoa, we won't go as far as them, but they do have a kind of a point, because we've had Conservative MPs show solidarity with Extinction Rebellion. And, you know, and so this mob who are now interrupting, you know, who are now stopping the traffic flow on the M25, you know, it demonstrates to me also that taking out an injunction appears to have no significance if you're a lefty. No significance. Because there's been injunctions sought by the courts, given by the courts, and they still get to do it. And everyone seems cool with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not just make bail condition of if we catch you there again, then you know, you're going to serve X amount of time or whatever. But they don't. They get processed, released, and they're back there an hour later.
Yeah, you see,
the thing is, again, the governments are terrified of going against the green agenda. So they've gone full ahead with it because what they want... The bottom line is the politicians who make these rules are being forced, not just by the media. I agree with the comment David made earlier, but they're also being forced by civil servants and the civil service that... The civil service control the government. We know that. You can't sack a civil servant. You can never fire them. Mm-hmm. You can only move them sideways. And they'll still get promoted at the set times, and they'll still get the pay increases, etc. So we're fighting against that. And it's just absolutely bizarre because in the end, we now know, and COVID was the great eye-opener, where the government makes the rules for you, not for it. And I'll just go back to the G7 meeting, where all the staff were wearing masks and all the politicians were shaking hands and hugging each other and no masks, because the rules are not for them. So when we have to go to electric cars, or you can't travel far enough because the electric car is crap and won't take you to your journey's end without it taking you 3 days, you might as well get a horse and a cart and go, okay? Because we'll be back to those sort of time frames if traveling around the country. But they will still have the big 4x4s and the Jaguars and stuff like that that will drive them around take fuel, take oil. We won't be allowed. And that's the point. The rules are for us, not for them.
For thee and not for me. I mean, Sadiq Khan goes in a 5 Range Rover convoy to walk his dog, and that says it all. But what if if you step back and think about this just for a moment, why has no politician anywhere in the world said, hang on a minute, why is a child getting involved in meetings of global leaders, lecturing people on climate, a child with no qualifications or science or anything? What's going on? But not one politician has had the spine to stand up and say.
World agenda. World government.
It's insane, isn't it? If you actually start thinking about this stuff, it's insane. Or, no one's had the backbone to say all those predictions about the Great Barrier Reef actually were wrong because it's recovering and growing. The Arctic caps are expanding, and we said they'd go back. So it doesn't matter that actually it's going the other way. This is the agenda we've got. We're ploughing ahead, and it's like a bulldozer. So as this contrary evidence keeps coming up, and it's just dropped. I mean, if you search on New York Times or anyone, all the predictions from 5 years ago that were headlined, they don't even report it now because it's gone the other way. So there is no there's no change in direction on this. There is a set agenda, come what may, and they're going to plough ahead.
And that is population control, isn't it?
Yeah, so my view on all this is if they messaged this differently and said, dropped all the world's going to end in 3 years nonsense that is just utter rubbish, and said, you know what, we want to do this because we don't want to have to rely on Arab oil, I think people get behind that and say, well, yeah, no, fair enough. I think the way the positioning, the plan is all wrong by pretending, the world's going to blow up and all this ridiculous nonsense. If they said, actually, we don't want reliance on Arab oil or whatever it might be, and these are the reasons, and laid it out, fair enough. Let's look at it.
Yeah, but Ed, if you take one country that specifically did just that, and that was America under Donald Trump, where America became energy dependent, independent for the first time, and therefore the dependency in Arab oil lessened. Look at the unbelievable effort to get Donald Trump out of office illegitimately, and look at that. So it's really, as you say, there are so many different factors feeding into this. That's for sure. So many factors really feeding into this. But ultimately, from my perspective at any rate, it's about a kind of a globalist control over everything, the erasure of the nation state. It's about all those things. It's about, if you want to talk about the rule of law and you live in New South Wales, I think that would be problematical because there is no longer a rule of law there. There's a rule of like an Australian Gestapo. So we live in mad times. But gentlemen, whilst we may live in mad times, we're also coming to the the end of our, what was to be 45 minutes. We've gone a bit beyond that, but I'm going to have to bring it to a conclusion. So, look, first of all, Ed, great to have you on the Podbean live stream. I hope it wasn't too traumatic. The technology is a little bit different, but it works well. So thank you for being in the show. Jed, thank you for being here as well. Hi, Phil. Nice to see you in the show as well. My final word is just basically to everybody who will listen to this and who's watched it live and whatnot. If you enjoy it, remember to hit the heart button. Let us know that you like the conversation. We're going to try and keep a kind of regular live stream thing going. So hopefully you can enjoy that. And just to say, hi, John, if any of you guys actually want to come into the conversation directly, I think I'm right in saying, Jed, there's a way to do that. So it's essentially look upon this as a veritable radio show. You can phone in, you can say your piece. We'll let you do that as well. So those are the main takeouts from that. And I will be back with more stuff tomorrow, as ever, on the normal podcast stream. But that is it from me and Ed and Jed for tonight. So night, everybody. Catch up with you soon.
Thank you. Good night, everybody.
Thank you. Goodbye.